everyone. Today we are going to be discussing food. Now, we all crave and eat food, mainly 3 times each day, often even more. But many of us are unaware of the processes, causes, and effects of many topics related to the food we consume. That's why this podcast today will cover appetite and satiety, the digestion of carbohydrates, gut microbiota, the Australian Guide to Healthy Eating, and nutritional evaluation. So get comfy as we prepare for this deep dive. In order to begin, we need to learn why as humans we like and dislike particular foods. I mean, we've all sat and whined about how hungry we are and how we're craving a certain biscuit or drink. But what does hunger actually mean? Hunger is defined as a physiological need for the body to eat. Other key terms include appetite, which refers to our desire to eat as well as what we eat, and satiety, which describes a signal from the body letting us know we are full. What we choose to eat may be determined by how our senses describe certain foods. Sensory properties include appearance, what the food looks like, for example, dull, stringy or flat, taste, if something sweet, rich or bitter, texture, tender, soft, dry, and aroma, the smell, maybe something can be aromatic or maybe even rotten. Now, you may be asking, Sathvika, is there actually any evidence behind what you're saying? Well, yes, there is many. For example, the CSIRO Sensory Diet Database set out to study how sensory qualities of diets are related to food composition and intake. Using a survey conducted with almost 150,000 Australian adults, one of the criteria associated with a higher diet quality was higher overall flavour intensity. Along with the Australian National Nutritional Physical Act Survey's analyses that were written in 2011 to 2012, this indicates that people with subjectively better diets are obtaining intense and often sweet flavours from lower energy, nutrient-dense foods such as soups and berries. This ultimately shows that many people consume foods that entice to their sensory properties, which is their first priority when choosing what to eat. Alright, so let's move on to carbohydrates by breaking its digestion down step by step. Carbohydrates start their journey the moment you take a bite. In the mouth, your teeth are physically breaking the food into smaller pieces, an example of mechanical digestion. But at the same time, chemical digestion is also occurring as the salivary glands release an enzyme called amylase, which begins breaking carbohydrates down into simpler sugars. The food then travels down the esophagus and into the stomach. The stomach's acidic environment turns the food mixture into chyme. Now, the pancreas releases pancreatic amylase, continuing the breakdown of starches. Other enzymes like lactase, maltase, and sucrose step in to finish the job, converting carbohydrates into monosaccharides, which are the simplest form of sugar. These monosaccharides are then absorbed through the walls of the small intestine and transported to the liver. The liver plays a key role here. It regulates blood glucose levels by releasing glucose into the bloodstream when needed. Any extra glucose that the body doesn't immediately use gets stored in the liver as glycogen. And that's essentially the full journey, from a bite of bread or pasta all the way to energy. Next, we have gut microbiota. According to a medically reviewed article from the Cleveland Clinic, gut microbiome is the ecosystem of microbiota that lives in our intestines. It helps to break down foods, produce vitamins, and influence how our body absorbs nutrients. Our diet directly influences our gut health, as if we consume a diverse range of fruits and veg, carbs, and dairy, we are increasing the range of microbiota in our gut, giving us plenty of prebiotics through foods such as apricots and undercooked pasta, as well as probiotics through fermented foods such as kimchi and yogurt. Gut microbiota helps out physical health through helping protect against inflammation in the body, as well as diseases such as type 2 diabetes and heart disease. It also promotes digestive health through the promotion of good bacteria helping prevent constipation. I'm sure we've all used or heard the phrase, "I can feel it in my gut." Well, what also I didn't understand before is that there's actually a connection from our brain to our gut and vice versa. Gut microbiota help mental health through the gut-brain axis, as there are millions of nerves connecting the gut to the brain. Any imbalance in the gut can negatively affect a person's mood or temper. So, we've been very technical so far. You may be wondering that if there's this much information on food out there, how are we supposed to know what and how much of something we need to consume in order to stay healthy? This is precisely why the Australian government made the Australian Dietary Guidelines. These are recommendations based on scientific evidence that provide advice on what foods we should be eating and how much of them. The Australian Guide to Healthy Eating puts the Australian Dietary Guidelines as a visual to make it more succinct and easier to see. It's broken into sectors to see how much of each of the five food groups, vegetables, fruit, dairy, lean meats, and legumes, as well as grains, whole grains, should be consumed daily. These resources are generally built around three key principles of research, which helps ensure the information is reliable and trustworthy. One major factor is that they're produced by the government, meaning they're designed as public resources rather than for profit. They also rely on input from credible sources like accredited nutritionists and various government departments, which helps ensure that information isn't coming from a single biased perspective. Another big piece is that the information is evidence-based. This includes things like systematic literature reviews, along with hundreds and hundreds of submissions from reputable organisations such as Diabetes Australia and Osteoporosis Australia. So it's not just opinion, it's built on a large body of research and expert input. Not only that, the data is also carefully analysed. An independent methodologist is brought in to review the findings, which helps make sure the conclusions are consistent and free from bias. And the great part about it is that you too can anytime just type Eat for Health in your search bar and know whatever you want to know. Finally, Harvard School of Public Health put out a website on lifestyle diseases. From reading it, it can be concluded that food choices are important in helping prevent obesity, as individuals need a variety of fruit, vegetables, grains, healthy fats, dairy, and protein, as well as plenty and plenty of water. The amount of food of these food groups are important too, as it differs between age, gender, and weight, as well as the amount of exercise an individual gets, as someone who exercises regularly burns more energy than someone who rarely does, meaning the person who regularly exercises needs to eat more to replenish their body. Well, we've reached the end, and we've covered how nutrition science helps individuals make informed food choices in modern Australia through understanding the science behind hunger and appetite, what foods need to be eaten to stay healthy, and the impact on our body. I hope the next time you eat a meal, you can retain one piece of knowledge and make an informed choice on whether or not you consume it. Catch you next time!